We're here in the middle of Daf Samach Aleph Amid Beis in the Sugya of Tanai Kofel, and the Gemara is quoting various psukim in the Torah to prove Tanai Kofel, meaning without the doubling up of the Tanai, the repetition of the Tanai on the side of the Lav, the Tanai would not be binding, and that would prove the sheet of Rabbi Meir that requires a Tanai Kofel in order for the Tanai to be binding, to be valid. The last thing we discussed was the Shvua that was imposed by Avram Avinu on Eliezer Avdo, and that Shvua was that he must go to the family to avoid Canaan, to find a wife, and the Chalos HaShvua that's being imposed upon him is that he should not avoid, shall we say, there's a double negative here, he should not go to the Mishpacha. First he should go to the Mishpacha. And the Torah indicates that in the context when Eliezer tells over to the family of Rivka the Shavua, the nature of the Shavua, he repeats it in the other side. His kofel is Tanai. He says, Ki tovol mishpachti, but if you will go to my mishpacha, az tinaka me'alasi. Im lo yitnu lecha, lo yitnu lach is vayisa naki me'alasi. And what this means is that if you do in fact go to the mishpacha, and at the end of the day they refuse to allow you to take a wife for my son Yitzchak, then the Shvua is null and void. And the implication is, and this would support Rabbi Meir's Tanai Kofel, that if he wouldn't have added, if Avraham Avinu wouldn't have added that if you do go to the Mishpacha, then you are free of this Shvua, then we would have assumed that the Shvua would be valid even if Eliezer was Mekayim the Tanai. The Shvua would still be binding. And therefore there was a need to be Kofel the Tanai and say that if Eliezer does in fact go to the Mishpacha of Avraham Avinu, then the Shvua is null and void. So the Gemara says, El Rabbi Chanina, this is in the middle of Samach Aleph Amud Beis, according to him that we derive the lav from the hen. In other words, we can imply the negative side from the positive. There's no need to be kofel l'tanai, is lamali. Why was Avraham Avinu compelled to add that if you in fact do go to my mishpacha, ki tovel mishpachti, az tinaka me'alasi, then the Shvua is null and void. L'chor, that's already implicit in the fact that Vayashbieni Adoni on the first round, he said that im lo el beis avi telech, right? That the Tanai was that you won't, if you know the Shvua will be imposed on you that you don't, that if you don't go to my beis avi, but if you do go to my beis avi, then there is no Shvua. So why do you have to spell out that if you do go to my beis avi, my mishpacha, there's no Shvua? It's true. I think more answer is Salka Daitach. I mean, I would have thought Hecha de Nichole Lo Ledida Lo Nichole Ledidhu, that included in this Shvua is not just that you, Elias, have to go to the beis avi, but moreover you have to bring back a wife as long as she agrees to marry, in this case Yitzchak. I don't care one way or the other if the mishpacha protests, is maisei bar kolchayu, even against the will of the mishpacha, you will bring back Rivka to Yitzchak. Kamash v'lon. That's why Avraham Avinu had to spell it out. Im lo yitnu lach Yitnu Lach is coming to tell us that if the Mishpacha protests, they're not willing to give her, then you're Naki, you're free of this Shvua. The Shvua is no longer binding. You don't have to force her, because again, she's willing to marry my son. That's called Nichala Lidida. You don't have to grab her against the will of the Mishpacha. That's not included in the Shvua. And that's the chiddush of the Kfelus, the second part of the Tanai, the repetition of the Tanai in the negative. Keep in mind, Rabbosai, that when this Tanai, when this Shvua is not binding, and again, the goal of the Shvua, the purpose of the Shvua is that a daughter of Benos Kanaan, of Kanaan, should not be brought back for Yitzchak. Then once the Shvua is not binding, because there was a violation of the, well, again, it's a little complicated to say a violation of the Tanai, but what I mean to say is if the Tanai for the Chalos Shvua was that you don't go, or that they don't agree to send her, and so forth and so on, then in such a case the whole Shvua is completely null and void, which means that we're back to square one, and Eliezer is allowed to bring a daughter from Benos Kanaan. Fine. Now, since the Gemara, we want to move on, has been discussing the language of the Shvua of Avram, and especially to reconcile the Shvua of Avram with Rabbi Chanina, the Gemara now addresses an additional pasuk, which l'chora is completely superfluous. And the Gemara asks the following question. We already have the beginning of the Shvua that if the Mishpacha refuses to give the Isha to marry Yitzchak, then Eliezer is exempt from the Shvua. So when the pasuk later on says v'im lo toveha isha, and then it says alecha sachrev v'nikisa mishwasi zos lomali, what's the chiddush here v'im lo toveha isha? That's already implicit in the beginning when it says lo telecha isha achra. And the Gemara says, Itzrich, we need that pasuk. Salkadait chamina hechad nichalu lididhu v'lo nichal la lidida. Let's say the B'nai Mishpacha, in the reverse case, would agree to have their daughter, their sister, marry Yitzchak, but she herself, Rivka, would object. She protests. Is nicey balkoch, we might think that Eliezer is required to bring this woman against her will. And once again, if he fails to do so, the Shvua is binding. Kamash Malan, Avram Avinu adds this in Lo Tova Aisha to clarify that it doesn't only mean that the requirement is not just that the Mishpacha agree, but also that she herself, the Miskadeshes, in this case Rivka, would agree. The Gemara goes on to quote another set of psukim that seems to support Rabbi Meir and the requirement of a tanai kofel. Bishlem Rabbi Meir, hainu dichsiv. We understand that in the parsha of the brachos and the klolos, and that's in parshas bechukosai, it says im bechukosai telechu, meaning that you will be blessed with all the blessings that were enumerated there in the psukim if you go in the ways of the chukim. And then it says v'im b'chukosai timasu, but if on the negative sense you violate the chukim, then you will be cursed with all the curses that are listed in that parsha of klolos. So since the Torah made the brachos depend upon the kiyum mitzvahs of b'chukosai telechu, apparently we would not know that if the people of Israel fail to live up to their condition of b'chukosei telechu, and instead they're not mekayim the Torah, they will forfeit these brachos. The Torah had to spell that out. El Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel lomali, why did the Torah have to spell out both sides? We should apply the principle of mechlal heina tashomea lav to understand that if the brachos are contingent upon the b'chukosei telechu, then if it's not b'chukosei telechu, then they don't have the brachos. It's true. Salka daitachamina, I would have thought imbuchu kosai te lechu bracha, but imbuchu kosai te masu lo bracha v'lo klola. I might think that if they fail to live up to their commitment, to their commandment and requirement to fulfill the mitzvahs, then they forfeit the bracha, but they don't get punished for it. Kamash malon, the Torah wants to spell out that if they don't follow the chukas Hashem, there will be a klola. It's not just the absence of a positive bracha, but there's also a negative, a klola. Now, we already saw such a thing with regard to Kayin, if you remember. The Torah says, "Im teitiv seisvim lo teitiv lepesach chatos roveitz," which means that if you don't rectify your ways and do tshuva Kayin, then you will be punished. Why don't we assume, therefore, using the case of Kayin as a paradigm, that all brachas and klolos in the Torah, it means that if they don't follow in the ways of Hashem, which is the contingency in the brachos, then they will be punished. Kayin himself and the parish of Kayin should be the melamed, should teach us that that's so. So if you take a look in the Atzmos Yosef, he has a teretzis kasha, that the Gemara thinks that there's a difference between tzibur and yachid. That's with regard to the yachid, that's Kayin as an individual, enochinami, if he doesn't straighten himself out and perfect his ways, he will be punished. But with regard to the tzibur, if the tzibur is not going in the chukos of Hashem, Hashem still has a love relationship, a special intimacy with the tzibur. He's not going to punish the tzibur. And therefore the Gemara asks, why is the Torah spelling this out? And the Gemara answers, to teach you that indeed even the tzibur itself will be punished if they don't follow the footsteps of Hashem. Now the Gemara supports Rabbi Meir with a set of psukim in Tanakh, in Yeshayahu and Novi. Bishleim el Rabbeinu ha'inu dechsiv, the Novi says to Klal Yisrael, im tovu ushmatem tuva aretz tochelu v'im temanu umarisem is cherev te'ukolu te'uklu. In other words, Yeshayahu is saying that the tova of tuva aretz tochelu is contingent on ushmatem, on listening and hearkening to the command of Hashem. Would we not therefore derive the conclusion that if they refuse to obey the will of Hashem and listen and implement His commands, then cherev, they will suffer the punishment? The answer is that you need a Tanai Kafel. The Torah to spell it out in both directions. El Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel Lomali. Why do we need this Tanai Kafel Itzrich? We need it. Salke Daitachamina, I would have thought. She'im Tovu. Meaning if you will desire it and you'll obey the command of Hashem, is Tovu, you'll receive goodness. V'im Temanu. If you don't follow in the footsteps of Hashem, you refuse to accept Hashem's commandments, lo tova v'lo ra'a, you'll be in a state in which you forfeit the good blessings, but at the same time, you don't have to suffer any punishments. Kol mashmal, and Yeshayahu tells me in this pasukim, lo yishmam kol Hashem, there will be repercussions, there will be punishment. Now, obviously, the question is, the Gemara just clarified that from Parashas Bechukosai, and once we have im Bechukosai Tim'asu, we know that there's going to be a punishment. So here also, I should have derived by equation, and now we're talking about a tzibur, keep in mind, that if they reject the mitzvos and refuse to implement them, they will be punished. Oh. So the answer might be, what about a case which fits into the middle over here? Again, we're dealing with the Atzmos Yosef, who interprets that there is a middle ground category here. That means that they don't fulfill the mitzvah of Hashem, but they don't find the mitzvah of Hashem repulsive. There's no timan. And the mashmos of the Navi, the implication of the Navi is im timanu, which means yisarvu l'kayim es ha-mitzvahs. That's what the Atzmos Yosef interprets. And we would have a habamina that timanu is not the extreme case where they reject the mitzvahs and find them repulsive, but rather this middle ground case of timanu means that yisarvu l'kayemes ha-mitzvahs. It's not a lashon of merry, it's a lashon of miun. Had the Torah says sedu marisem, then we would say that okay, if there was merry, they will be punished. But if there was just himanus, an abstention from fulfilling the mitzvahs of Hashem, which is called timanu, then they will not be punished. And that's what the Gemara answers, that we need an additional pasuk here to tell us that the non-fulfillment of the mitzvahs, even without merry, without open rebellion, is enough to engender a punishment. Now the Gemara mentions the pasuk in Yeshaya, the Gemara wants to clarify the pshat in the pasuk. My, here we're on to Samach Beis and Ben Aleph. What does it mean, cherev to uklu? It means sheyochlu charevos. Cherev to uklu means they will eat swords. What does that mean, to eat swords? Amar Rava, milcha gilal nisa, nama disare akusha. Ubitsoli, it means, says Rava, that we're talking about heavy, thick salt. We're talking about barley bread, which is very difficult and very dry. We're talking about onions. The Omar Mar, pas purne chareva. In other words, the word cheref here is not a reference to a sword, but it's a reference to certain kinds of foods that are very difficult to swallow, to palate. Like, imagine taking a piece of thick salt and swallowing it, or very hard dry bread, or onions. And the Gemara wants to demonstrate that the word to ukalu in this context is referring not to a cherev, which means a sword, but the word cherev could refer to these other kinds of foods. Pas purne. This is a large piece of dry bread, chareva. It's called chareva. And it's usually eaten b'melach u'bitzolim, is kashim laguf kecharevos, kecharevos. So the word cherev indicates anything that's very, very harmful and painful to the body. And what Hashem is saying is that you're going to be cursed if you refuse to fulfill the mitzvah Hashem with these kinds of very harmful foods that you'll be forced to eat. The Gemara now flips things around. Until now, we've been quoting verses to establish Rabbi Meir Shita that we require tonight kofel. Now the Gemara goes punfaker bishlemi Rabbi Chanina ben Gamla. We can understand cases where there is no tonight kofel in the Torah, and we apply the principle of michlal hain from the positive atashamei lav, you derive the negative. Hainu dechsiv, in the case of sota who drinks the mayim hamaorim, and the Kohen says to him lo shachav ish osach v'im lo satis Tuma tachasi sheikh hinaki. If you did not have this extramarital adulterous relationship, then you are free and protected from the impact of these meimarim. And the Torah doesn't say in the other way that if you in fact did commit this crime of adultery, then you will not be cleansed of the mayim, you'll not be protected from the impact of the mayim. So there is no Tanai Kofel. El Rabbi Meir, Chinki Miboile, the Kohen should have added that if in fact you did commit this adulterous crime, then Chinki, you will suffer Chenek, because that's the impact of the Mayim, the drinking of the water. Omrab Tanchum, Hinoki Ksiv, without a Yud. And what is the significance of dropping the Yud? It should have said hey yud nun kuf yud, and there would have been a nun, a yud between the hey and the nun. The Torah dropped this yud, and the reason for that is that the Torah wants to say hain. hey meaning as if it said chinki. It's interesting that in some occasions this requires a lot of research. We can read a hey like a ches. There are two like exchangeable letters, and if you exchange a ches for the hey of hinki, it becomes chinki, meaning the Torah is spelling out the fact that if in fact ki satis, then chinki, then you will be choked by the water. And the Torah left out this yud to indicate that we could read the word, and this is called the Mesores, as if without the yud it means chinki. The Gemara now goes back to support Rabbi Meir. Bishleim el Rabbi Meir dechsiv chinki. Now that the Torah left out the yud and we read it as if it said chinki to tell us that if she in fact had znus, then she will be choked by the water. It makes sense according to a mayor who accepts the requirement of a tnai kofel to spell out what would be if she in fact had this relationship. El Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel, lomeli, why did the Torah have to use this language of chinki, which implies that you will be naki, or it also implies chinki, chanika? Maybe the Torah could have just said tichyi, that you will survive it. It's true. The Torah needed the word chinki for this drush of chinki. Why? Salkadait chamina im lo shachav ish, he nokiv im shachav lo, he nokiv lo chinki. That if in fact she had this relationship, she won't be free of the curse, but on the other hand, she won't die of chenek. Ella Isura Bialma, she has violated an Isur, and she deserves some sort of divine punishment, that's for sure, in the Bezdin Shalmala, but here in Bezdin, nothing's going to happen to her. Kamashmal the Torah wants to mechadish that if she in fact had znus, then she will suffer the chenek. The Gemara goes on. Bishleim Rabbi Meir, Hainu, we understand the parsha in Bamidbar Tes of a case of hazos mechatos on a tomei mes, and there's a kefal atnai. Tichsiv hu yischata bo vayom hashlishi uvayom hashvi yitar. The Torah says that if he has hazah on the third and the seventh days, then he will become tar. That's hazah b'meichatos from the paradum of him lo yischat. The Torah says that if in fact he did not implement this hazah on Tuesday and Saturday, meaning on the third day of the week and the seventh day of the week, is lo yitar, he will not become tar. So why not apply the principle of michal hein atashomei lav, the Torah to spell out that im lo yischata is lo yitoher. So that works out beautifully according to Rabbi Meir, who requires the Tanai Kofel. Elo le Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel lomeli, why did the Torah feel compelled to write im lo yischata lo yitor? Why not leave it out because michal hein atashomei lav? It's true. Rabbi Chanina would say that we need it. Why? Salkadait chamina mitzvahs hazah b'shlishi u'v'shvi. V'hecha di ovad b'chad minayu ovad kamash malon. We would think that l'chadchila the mitzvah requires hazah twice a week, once on the third and once on the seventh. But if he, b'di'evit, only did one of the two, whether it be shlishi or shvi, that would suffice in order to achieve tara. Kamash b'lon, the Torah wants to spell it out. Im lo yischata v'yom ha-shlishi uva-yom ha-shvi. Meaning, it's not enough that you did one of the two, you have to do both. And if you didn't have hazah of both shlishi and shvi, then you're not tar. Now, once we're dealing with the case of tara mitumas mes, and why Rabbi Chanina agrees that you need kefel atnai, Adavurcha, the Gemara clarifies another pasuk, which l'chora the Torah didn't have to write, because once the Torah says v'hu yischata bo b'yom ha-shlishi v'yom ha-shvi yitar, why does it say afterwards v'hizah ha-tar al-atomi v'yom ha-shlishi v'yom ha-shvi? Why do I need that? Torah already said Yischato b'yom ha'shlishi yom ha'shvi Yitzrek Salka Daitach Amina. I would have thought that it's possible to do the Hazah even on other days of the week. And when it says Yom HaShlishi, that's only to exclude that there should not be a Hazah before Yom HaShlishi. For example, on Sheni. And then the Pasuk of Yom HaShvi is telling us Limute Shishi, not before Yom HaShvi. Is the Kamemayit Bimei Atara Shalom, because if he does the Hazah earlier, then he's diminishing the days of Tarvel. Hecha di avad bishlishi uvishmini. Let's say he did shlishi, and now the second Hazah he gives on the eighth day, the Kamafish, he's expanding the days of Tarvel Miatara. His Emo Shapirdom, I would assume that in such a case, certainly the process would be effective. He was being Marchik Tumo even more. Is Kamashbal and the Torah wants to tell us, no, the Hazah has to take place on the third and the seventh day exclusively. No other days will be accepted. Now what does that mean? Does that mean as far as the mitzvah is concerned, l'chatchila, or even as far as the Torah is concerned? Are we going to say that if a person had Hazah on Shlishi and then he missed the Hazah of Shvi, they postponed it accidentally by a day, whatever the mistake might have been, and they only did the Hazah on Shmini, he's not Tar? So if you take a look in the Rashi seems to imply very strongly that certainly if the Hazah took place on days 3 and 8, then certainly the Tara would be achieved and it would be effective. But lo nismaid ella imhirba yoser min azor rishon al azor shnia. So it means the following: if you're delaying the period of tumah, extending tumah from the beginning of the process until the first hazah rishona, that's not an issue. Right? So you're extending the period of tumah up until the hazah rishona. That, Rashi says, is not an issue. That's not awesome. The problem is if you separate from the first hazah and the second hazah and you expand that period of time, that's being excluded. Now the Gemara asks Akasha, what is the end of the pasuk telling me? V'chito b'yom ha'shvi. Let's read the whole pasuk. It says, V'chito b'yom ha'shvi, V'chibes b'gadav v'rochatz b'mayim v'tar b'erev. Lomali, the Gemara says, why do I need that? Obviously, if he did the hazah and yom ha'shvi, that's fine. It's salke daitach amino, I would have thought. Hani mili. When do we apply this requirement of two hazos? Likodshim, to be matir the tome to eat kodshim. Aval litruma. But if he's coming to eat truma, which is only kodshe gvul, it doesn't have the same status as basar kodshim on the mizbeach, is bechad nami sagi, maybe one hazo would be sufficient. Kamashvan, the Torah wants to tell us that enochinami, you will require two hazos, even to be matir achilas truma. And that leads us to the Mishnah on Daf Samach Beis Amud Aleph. The Mishnah says, Hamakadesh Esa Isha, if the Lashon HaKedushin that he implemented is the Omar, Kasavar Hayisi Shehi Kohenis. So this is not really the Lashon HaKedushin, but rather he comes along, the Mekadesh, and he says, I was under a mistaken impression. I really thought that she was the daughter of a Kohen. He's a Kohenis. Vare Levia, in fact, she's not a Kohenis at all. She's a Levia. Levia Vare Kohenis. I thought that she was a Bas Levi, but it turns out that she was a Bas Kohen. Ania Vaharehi Ashira. I thought that she was a poor person and she's a rich person. Ashira Varehi Ania. I thought that she was rich, but in fact she's poor. Harei Zimukudesh Esmitneshalo Hit Ato. if she did not deliberately mislead him, then the Kiddushin is chal. He didn't make any t'nai. And not only is that true, that the Kiddushin is valid in the case where there was a Aliyah L'Shvach, where she's even better than what he anticipated. She's not only a Levi, she's even a Kohen. She's not only a poor person, she's a rich person. But even if it went down, you know, he thought that she was rich and she turned out to be poor. He thought that she was a Kohen and she turned out to be from Levi. Nevertheless, as long as there was no misleading, there was no active way that she gave him the misimpression, then the Kiddushin is valid. If he deceived himself, that's his problem. When she actively deceived him, she made a false claim, then that would be a Kiddushei Tos and would invalidate the Kiddushin. And if a person stipulated explicitly at the time of the Kiddushin that he wants to marry a Bas Kohen, and she wasn't a Bas Kohen, that's something else. But here, it's all a matter of Dvarim Shivalev. The exact status of the Isha was not something that he spelled out, and therefore we cannot undermine and invalidate the Kiddushin unless, of course, she misled him. Now the Mishnah goes on to address cases of a Maisa Kiddushin with a woman who right now, at the time the Maisa Kiddushin, is not Re'uya L'Kiddushin. Can this Maisa Kiddushin take place later on, Bichal, later on when she becomes Re'uya L'Kiddushin? Ha'omer Le'isha. Hare at Mekudeshes Li'Liachasha as Gayer. Right now, he's not Jewish. So he wants to implement the Maisa Kiddushin. It should be Chal later on after the Gerus. Notice, he had plans to be Mizgayer. So he gives money to a Jewish woman, and he says to let this be Kiddushei Kesef, Kesef Kiddushin, and the Chalos Kiddushin would be suspended until after the conversion. Or alternatively, right now he's an Eved Knani. And an Eved Knani is Mufka from Kiddushin with a Bas Yisrael. But he sets up the Maisa Kiddushin in such a way that it should be Chal after Shichrur, when he becomes a full-fledged Jew. Oh, Liachar Shetizgairi. Or Liachar Shetishtachari. Let's say he says to a non-Jewish woman that this Kesef Kiddushin should be Chal after your Gerus. Or if he says it to a Shivcha after your Shichrur. Because with the Shichrur, she becomes a full-fledged Jewess. And the Kedushas Yisrael is now Shlemu Gemura. Another case. A man says to a woman, Haret Mekudeshes Lili Achar Sheyomuz Bailech. She's an Eishes Ish right now. Let this Maisa Kedushin be Chal after your divorce, or after the death of your husband. Or let's say he is Makadesh, a sister of his wife, Achos Ishto, and he's Makadesh Oliachash Thomas Achosech. After your sister, wife will die. And then the Iser Erva of Achos Ishto is removed, because Achos Ishto is only Bechaye Ishto. So when he says Liachash Thomas Achosech, it's the same as Liachash Yomus Bailech. Right now there's an error that prevents the Chalos Kiddushin, but let's do the Maisa Kiddushin, and the Chalos will take effect after the impediment is removed. Well, Liachash Yachlots Lech Yevamech. Let's say this woman is a Yevamelashuk. In other words, she lost her husband, and her husband died without any children. Now her husband, as a brother, has to perform chalitza. Now a man comes along, an alien person, and he says, you know what, I'm going to be Mekadesh you now, and the Kedushin should take effect after so-and-so, the brother of your late husband, will be choletz. Of course, this touches on the question whether Kedushin Tovsim B'Yavam L'Shuk. Well, let's assume that ain't Kedushin Tovsim B'Yavam L'Shuk. So the Tfisa's Kedushin at this point, before she gets Chalitza, is impossible. So he sets it up in such a way that although the Maisa Kedushin is now when she's Yavama, but nevertheless the Chalot should be Chal after she is a Chalutza, she's Muteres, is in all these cases, Eina Mekudeshes. This is the famous principle of Davar Shalom Bali Olam, which means that you can only implement a Maisa Kinyan if at this moment there's a possibility of a Chalos. You can, in fact, delay the chalos, but that's because the maisa that you're doing is meaningless, is meaningful, insofar as has within it the potential of being chal immediately now. But if you have a maisa that's mufka from any sort of meaningful chalos, that becomes a dover shalom boliola. So to be mekadesh a woman who is now a Gentile woman, right, she's a shiksa, as we would say, she's not Jewish, and say that the Maisa Kedushin is meaningful for the time after Hageris, that's called Dover Shalom Baliolam. And the principle of Ein Ando Makde, Dover Shalom Baliolam, applies to Kedushin as well. Now the Mishnah continues. Here's another case. V'chein HaOmer, if a man says L'chavero, there's a Girsa question here, but let's assume the Girsa is V'chein HaOmer L'chavero, Im yolda ishtecha nekeva, hare zu mekudeshes li. In other words, he says to a person that if your wife is pregnant with a girl, I would like to be mekadesh her now. And again, this is an ubar b'mei ima. That's also considered Dover Shalom Bali Olam, Eino Mekudeshes. In other words, since you cannot be Mekadesh and Uber now, even though you want to set up a Kedushin that should be Chal later when she's born, it's a Dover Shalom Bali Olam. And finally, we have the last case in the Mishnah. V'im Haisa Eishes Chavero Meuberes Dvarav Kayom. Now, the Marsha claims, and you'll see that there are brackets here, that this is a mistake. That this is really not part of our Girsa. Because it comes out, according to this, that if his wife, the wife of his friend, was indeed Muberes, and it's a case of Hukar Ha'ubar, in other words, you could see the baby in its mother's belly. That's no longer Dover Shalom Bali Olam. And so if she gives birth indeed to a female, then the Kedushin is Chal. So we have to understand whether or not this is true, whether Hukar or Ubar would change the situation and make it into a Dover HaBoli Olam. But right now we want to start the sugya itself, which begins with a Mishnah in Trumos, Tnan Hasan. In the beginning of Masechta Trumos, it says, Ein Tarmin min atolush al amechubar v'im taram ein trumaso truma. The halakha of Afrashas Truma requires tolush, requires that those fruits or grains that were growing in the ground were harvested. So he's not allowed to do this Afrashas Truma. If he went ahead and he was Mafrish Truma, the Truma is meaningless. Because he cannot be Mafrish on Mechubar. Boy Minei Rav Asi Mirab Yochanan Omar Peros Aruga Zu Tlushin Yu Trumal Peros Aruga Zu Mechubarin. He wants to be Mafrish from a strip of Tlushin Notice they've already harvested, they've already cut the fruits or the grains from the ground, and he wants that to be the afrasha to potter up another strip of land, which is mugubarim. Or perhaps he said alternatively, peros arugazu mugubarim yu trumal peros arugazu tlushin. He was mafrish from mugubar onto tolush, and the mugubar is not subject to the law of truma, but he adds lichshe yitlushu. In both cases, he says that what I'm doing now, this hafrasha, should take effect, should be chal, after tlisha, meaning after ktsira, v'nitlishu, mahu, what's the din in such a case? Meaning, is there a possibility of setting up a hafrasha on a davar shelo baliola? And Rabbi Yochanan's response to Rav Asi, omar le, kol she biyado lav mechusar maisa, domi. Since he himself could harvest the fruit, that's called biyado. And if it's biyado, he has the ability, the potential to make this change, then it's considered not mechusar maisa, but as if he already did that which he could do. In other words, the truma is eino chinami chal. And Rabbi Yochanan recognizes the validity of the truma, and he views it as if the mechuba was already tolsh. And why? Because it's biyada. So the underlying principle again in this entire discussion, based on the Mishnah in Trumos, is that truma is only relevant to tolsh, and that's derived from the pasuk of Reishis Degancha. Degancha means that which can be collected and gather together. That's only if it's already cut. Rabbi Yochanan is coming with a gevaldig chiddush. He's qualifying and limiting the din of davar shelo baliolam. Of course, it's a davar shelo baliolam, and it's not chal. But if he has the ability to change the mitzvahs in such a way, it's biyado, that it would allow for the chalos. So he could remove the barrier that prevents the chalos. Then even if he hasn't yet actually implemented that change, nevertheless, it's chal. So if, for example, in the case of truma, what we're looking at now is mechubar, which makes it impossible to be considered reishis degancha, so it's not in a state in which it lends itself to hafrashas truma, nevertheless, says Rabbi Yochanan, it's considered davar Shebali Olam, why? Because since the Balabayis can immediately change the situation and harvest the fruit in such a way that now it lends itself to Afrasha's Truma, therefore we view it as if the Afrasha is Chal and the Mechubar is considered as if it was Tolush. So now the Gemara says, "Eisvei ha'omer liisha reat mekudeshes li liachashes gaya liachashes disgairi liachashes tach liachashes disgairi liachashi yomus bailech liachashi tomus achosech liachar shiachlots le yevomech eino mekudeshes." And the Gemara now is going to focus on the case of ger bishle makulu. In all the cases, I understand why the kedusha is invalid. Lav biyado, he can't create any of this change. He can't bring about the death of her husband or the death of his wife. However, eleger hevi biyado. In other words, a person can decide to be misgayer. Why isn't that considered biyado? And that would make it into davar aboli olam according to Rabbi Yochanan. Now the question is, What is the issue? Is the issue that the Gemara is focused on and singling out here is the case where he says Almanasha as Gayer, or Liachash as Gayer? What about the case of Liachash that is Gairi? Lechora, that's not the Yodo. You know, he has the power to convert, but not her. So perhaps we should assume that the Gemara is attacking Rabbi Yochanan from the case of Liachar She Es Gayer, that is Biyodo. So Gemara answers, Ger Nami Lav Biyodo. Even the process of Geirus is not totally in his hands. The Omar Rabbi Chia Bar Abba Omar Rabbi Yochanan, and here we're going to turn to Daf Samach Beis Amud Beis. Ger Sorech Shlosha, you need a Bezdin in order for Geirus to take place. And how do we know this? My Taima, it's derived from Mishpat Ksivbei. The Torah says in Vayikra Chav Dalet, in the parish of Geirus, it says Mishpat, which means Kiddin. Mishpat means a judgment that has the status of any din that requires a Bezdin. And therefore we need a Bezdin of three getting together. Otherwise, the Kabbalah's mitzvahs and the Geirus that he undergoes is not valid. Is Mimela Mi Yemar, says Gemara, is Dakaku Lehani Tlosa, who says that he'll find three people. That's out of his biyado. It's not biyado. In other words, in the case of a non-Jew who tries to effectuate a Maisa Kiddushin, you can't say that since he has the potential to be Megayer himself, therefore it should be Chal and it's Biyado, because it depends upon others. He needs the Bezdin getting together three people and forming a Bezdin in order to implement his Geirus. So the Gemara says, Maskifla Rav Abba Bar Mamol, I would question Rabbi Yochanan's principle. Elameato Hanosein Pruta L'Shivcha V'yoma Haret Mekudeshes L'Ilacha Shesh Tacharech. What about the case where he gives Kesef Kedusha to a Shivcha and he says that this Chalos, the Chalos Kedusha should be withheld, should be postponed until after Shichur? Is Hani Nami Avi Kedusha? The Mishnah seems to contradict Rabbi Yochanan and invalidates the Kedushin in its case. According to Rabbi Yochanan, here it's certainly Biyado. He has to just give her a get Shechur. He doesn't need a Bezdin for that. And therefore, basically, what we have here is a case of Biyado. Hachi Hashta, the Gemara says, Hosamei Kar Behema, Hashta Das Acheres. What does this mean? There's no comparison, because our case of a Shivcha is similar to a case of a Behema. And what does that mean? She's now a Shivcha. Kiddushin doesn't apply to a Shivcha, just like Kiddushin doesn't apply to Behema. Can't be Mekadesh Behema. Is Hashta Das Acheres. In other words, after the Adon is Meshachrer the Shivcha and she becomes a full Jewess, a full-fledged Bas Yisrael, Kedushas Yisrael, then and only then does she have a Das and therefore she can agree to Kedushin. But as long as she's a Shivcha, she doesn't have the status of a Das Kedushin. And therefore she's completely excluded from marriage, and even Rabbi Yochanan would have to agree that such a Kiddushin is totally invalid. In other words, there's a fundamental difference here between Truma and Geirus. In the case of Truma, you know, we don't have to have a fundamental change in which we're creating something new. What we're doing is we're taking Tolush and we're taking Mechubar, making it into Tolush. I mean, it's the same Chefta, just it's either Tolush or Mechubar. But in the case of Geirus, that's already a different cheft. What I don't understand is why the Gemara couldn't have used that logic earlier in the case of Geirus. So now the Gemara asks another kashya, Rabbi Yochanan, V'elohad diomer avoshia, hanosein pruta liishto v'yomer laret mekudesh li liachar she'agar sheikh. Eino mekudeshes. A man gives Kiddushin to his own wife and he says that this Kesef Kiddushin should effectuate a Chalos Ishus after I divorce you. Is why does Why does Rav Oshia say Eina Mekudeshes Nami Rabbi Yochanan Havi Kedushin? According to Rabbi Yochanan, this is Biyado, and therefore the Kedushin should be valid. In other words, the woman is now in a state which does not allow for Kedushin. She's already an Eishes Ish, but nevertheless, the Mekadesh in this case has a Biyado. He single-handedly can hand her a divorce. He doesn't need any help from any Bezdin. And once again, after the divorce is delivered, she becomes Ru'uyol Ishus. And therefore, according to Rabbi Yochanan, we cannot accept Rav Oshia, because certainly in this case of Liachar She'agar Sheikh, according to Rabbi Yochanan, it would be valid. And now the Gemara is looking for a way of saying that, of defining that even Rabbi Yochanan would agree to Rav Oshia, and this is not called biyado. So the Gemara answers, Nehi de biyado legarsha, biyado lekadsha. Yeah, he could divorce her, but he cannot be makadish her. And what does that mean? Is not similar to Truma, and here even Rabbi Yochanan would agree that the halacha, the principle of biyado, would not apply. In the case of Truma, all he has to do is harvest the fruits. Nothing else, there's no other barrier to prevent the chalos hafrashas Truma from being chal. But here, there's another barrier that he has to overcome. It's not just that he divorces his wife, but she has to agree to remarry him. We need Das Aisha for the Kedushin. So it's not really totally biyada. So the Gemara says, Tifsho de boy Rav Oshia. Now we can answer a question of Rav Oshia. No sense shtei prutos liisha. He gives two prutos. Biachas omer lo hiskachi li hayom. Ubiachas omer lo hiskachi li liachas shagar sheikh. Is tifsho minei de lo avi kedushin? He wants to marry her with one pruta, and he wants to give the second pruta that it should be chal in event and after the divorce from the first kedushin. Is now tifshot minei. We should be able to decide the question of Rav Oshia and say that it's a davar shelo b'olam. The second kedushin, which is liach gerushin, is a davar shelo b'olam. So the Gemara says no. Dilma ki hechi the tafsi kedushin hashta tafsi nami liacher zman. Rav Oshia's question is still pretty pressing. It's still pretty valid, because perhaps we could say the svara that just like kedushin could take place now, it could be effective with the first pruta. Is now he could be tofes kedushin for liacher zman after the divorce will take place with the second pruta. And the reason for that is because it's biyado legarsha. Married woman to accept kiddushin for liacha gerushin, that's a davar shelo b'olam. And there's no possibility that even Rabbi Yochanan would validate such a kiddushin. But here, where he gives her two prutos, she's not a married woman. And therefore, as far as the chalos kedushin, which he wants to create a double chalos kedushin, one with each pruta, it's not a davar shelo b'olam. She really lends herself to the chalos kedushin, even now. So if a woman is already married, then she's mufka from a chalos kedushin, so it becomes a davar shelo b'olam. And it's not totally biyado, as we said, because we need her das to remarry him after the divorce. But in the case where he's giving her two prutos, and simultaneously he's marrying her twice, so to speak, she is not considered a davar shelo b'olam. She doesn't have that status because she does lend herself as a pnuya to a chalos kedushin. So in other words, Rav Oshia's question about the second maisa kedushin, the one that's going to be chal after the gerushin, is that a davar shelo b'olam? In other words, we can understand very well that since right now she's accepting the second pruta and she is in a state of pnuya in which she can be miskadeshes, then maybe we should see the second pruta as being a davar shebolial. He could be mekadisha with a stipulation that this kiddush should take place at a later date. But Rav Oshia vacillates on this point because logically one could say that this is a case of davar shebolialo, because there's a moment now and there's a moment later on. Now, at the present moment, the second kiddushin, in order to take effect, has to be suspended until after the gerushin. In other words, she'll only be married with the second pruta after two things take place: that she be mekudeshed with the first pruta, and then she receives a get. So, what is the status of this woman? Shall we define her as a davar shebal yolam because right now she's a pnuya, or should we say that perhaps she still is to be defined as a davar shebal yolam because he doesn't really have the power, biyado, to make her into a grusha and then a mekudeshes later on? So Tanya Kavasei. Just 1 second. Where were we up to in the Gemara? Rav Yochanan. We bring a brisa to support the view of Rav Yochanan. Ein tarmi min atolish ala mechuba v'im taram ein trumaso truma. Ketzad. Peros arugazu tlushim yu truma al peros arugazu mechuberes. Peros arugazu mechuberes yu truma al peros arugazu tlushim. Lo amar klum afal amar likshe yitlishu v'nitlishu dvarv kayomim. So in a case where he's being mafrish on mechubar, or from tolish onto mechubar, or the opposite way, from mechubar onto tolish, that's not valid kedushin. But if he says l'chsheyit l'shu, that the truma should be chal after the tlisha, v'nif l'shu, and in fact, the truma, the peros were harvested, is dvar of kayamin. Then there is a chalos truma, and that would again seem to support Rabbi Yochanan that it's biyada. Yeser al kain, Omar, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, afilu Omar peres arugazu tlushim yitruma al peres arugazu mechuberes, peres arugazu mechuberes yitruma al peres arugazu tlushim, l'chiyaviu shlish v'yitlishu, v'yaviu shlish v'nitlishu, dvarav kayomim. In other words, according to Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, you could be mafrish truma even on a davar shelo biyolam, even when it's not biyado. Because what's happening over here? You're talking about before havah shlish. Before havah shlish, there's no chal shem tevel, there's no possibility of hafrashas truma. And he's saying that he wants to be mafrish now for later on, and the chalos truma will be suspended until there's havah shlish. Havah shlish is not something that's biyado, and yet Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov validates the hafrashas truma even in this case. So that it comes out, according to Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, we seem to be rejecting the whole concept of davar shelo bal yolam. Amar Rabba, Rabba says, lo amar Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov ela b'shachas. Only in a case of shachas, aval b'agam lo. Let's try to understand the difference between shachas and agam. Shachas is a very early stage in the growth of the produce of the grain, and it's way before havas shlish. And very often, what they used to do is cut down shachas because that encourages the ground to produce more. And this is a stage that although the tvua has not reached havas shlish, but nevertheless it is a certain stage in the development of the tvua. Earliest stage is called agam, and agam is a stage in which the tvua is just a little bit above the ground. And if you cut it down, you get nothing from it. It doesn't in any way help you. There's no crop here that has any practical value. But on the other hand, if it reaches the stage of shachas, which is a state in which, although it's not yet avah shlish, but you can have some hanah from the tvua, that is considered a davar shebaliol, and it lends itself to truma even before avah shlish, as long as it is shachas. Now, what benefit can you have from shachas? So we said before that it might encourage the, you know, nutrients in the ground to produce more. But in addition to that, shachas was often cut down to give animals. It was a meichel behema. So at this stage of shachas, that's the way Rav understands the statement of Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, at this stage of shachas, we already have something that lends itself to afrasha. Before the stage of shachas, it's just let's see how Rashi says it. Einam ela tzmachim rachim, and therefore there's no chalos shem truma on aga. That's clearly a davar shelo b'yoli olam, and even Rav Lozvet Yaakov would agree that there's no afroshes truma. Rav Yosef Omar, Rav Yosef disagrees, and he says afilu biagam, that Rav Lozvet Yaakov went as far as to say that there's afroshes truma even at the early stage of agam. Even that's considered something which lends itself to hafrashas truma. So bli neder, what we have to discuss, and that's going to require some analysis, is why does Rav Yosef extend hafrashas truma even to agam? So Mr. Shem, we'll pick that up next time.